Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. In this week's episode, we're discussing the NBA and what's going down there. We'll be jumping all up into March Madness, and we'll have our Jack's hot take. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social medias. As you can see in our new folder we're using for a lot of our stuff, all of our social medias are down below the logo, including YouTube, Facebook, X, Instagram, The Stunt, and Threads. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it,
he gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. So glad to be back with you guys after missing last week. I told you guys I try to do every week. That's already gone to Hades. However, I am back with you guys for season 5, episode 3 of the Just In Time Sports audio podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe, as you guys heard in the intro. But in case you skipped the intro, just wanted to hear B-Roy's amazing song, I get it. But make sure you like, rate, and subscribe, and share to the Just In Time Sports Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. But we're going to jump right into it. I know it's March Madness. We're going to get to March Madness, I promise. March Madness is going to be our B-block. But our A-block today, go a little bit behind the curtain, is going to be the NBA. I know that everybody wants to talk about March Madness. We're going to discuss it. I'm actually watching Caitlin Clark's last home game. Because as you guys know, Iowa, being a top 3 seed in the region, got to host the first and the second round games. Really cool thing that the women's side does, that I wish the men would do. But we're going to get to that bridge. We're going to get to that a little later and how that impacts to me, how that impacts March Madness, especially on the women's side. However, we're going to jump right into the NBA. Of course, when we talk about the NBA, we're going to discuss those standings first. So the Boston Celtics, the one seed out east. The Milwaukee Bucks, 11 games back, number 2. The Cleveland Cavaliers, 14 games back, and number 3. The Celtics have already clinched, so we're actually going to talk about the east as relevant to the second seed, since the Bucks have already clinched, have already clinched the one seed. So, but Boston's clinched. Bucks at 2, Cavs 3 back from them, Knicks 3.5 back from the Bucks, Orlando is 4 back from the Bucks, Pacers are 6.5 back from the Bucks, the Heat are 7 back from the Bucks, the 76ers are also 7 back from the Bucks, the Bulls are 12 back from the Bucks, and the Hawks are 14.5 back from the Bucks. So Boston to Cleveland is the same gap as Milwaukee to Atlanta. So the 1 to the 3 is the same gap as the 2 to the 10 out east. And that tells you how much of a dominant season that Boston has had so far. And then out west, we have the Nuggets, the 1 seed, entering tonight's games. So you have the Nuggets, the 1 seed, Thunder, half game back, T-Wolves, 1 game back, then the Clippers, 5.5 back, Pelicans are 6 back, Phoenix is 8 back, Sacramento and Dallas are 8.5 back, Lakers are 11 back, Golden State is 13.5 back. So definitely some tight races. Again, to make you laugh, Boston to Milwaukee, which is the 1 to the 2 in the East, is the same gap as Denver to the Lakers, which is the 1 to the 9 in the West. So that just tells you the relation or the dominance that Boston has had. Boston has been so dominant, actually, they have clinched a playoff. They have clinched a conference in the East before anybody else has clinched a playoff or a berth. That's insane because technically, Denver, well, mathematically, they've got 14 oddish games left. Denver could lose every game. Could go 4-8, let's just say, or 4-10 with the last 14, and the Mavericks rip off 13-1, and technically the Nuggets could fall all the way down from 1-9. So pretty insane situation. Out east, rather, with Boston being so dominant. Does Boston now begin to rest players? Do they look across the bow and they see what the others at the Western Conference is doing? Because they have a couple of games on everybody in the West, too. So during that last week, does Boston rest players and try and steal, you know, extra week off? They're going to get a week off, of course, not being in the play-in tournament. But do they try and steal them a week and a half, 2 weeks maybe, for a Tatum and a Brown? You know, those guys who've been playing heavier minutes, do they start playing, you know, do they not play those last two or three games? Both of them are in nowhere near danger of the 65-game rule, so they no longer have eligibility for All-NBA and postseason awards and et cetera. But, you know, do they take advantage of those last few weeks, or those last few games, rather, those last week of games, in order to really make sure they go into the playoffs rested and healthy and ready to battle? To me, they're going to be the battle of the Heat of the Sixers. The Pacers could be in that play-in. So some combination of Pacers, Heat, or Sixers is what they're going to square off with. If it's Sixers and it's Embiid, imagine being Boston. Right? And there's been no update on Joel Embiid of any substance, right? So it's not like Embiid 2 weeks away and you're Boston going, you know, what if it's Philly? And we do all of this work. We have all this amazing season. We do all this battle. We do all this greatness in our season. We clinch the conference for anybody else in the playoffs. Like, you do all this crazy stuff, and our reward is a rested, healthy Joel Embiid. Like, it's just, you know, imagine that being an award. Milwaukee, you do all this battling, you do all this scrapping, you fire your coach midseason, you change, you take the shrapnel from all the media world about, you know, firing your coach midseason when it seems like you don't have a plan. And your reward is a healthy, rested Joel Embiid. Now, again, this is all hypothetical. Embiid is not giving any indication, or from what I've heard, any indication he's anywhere close back to being on the court. Ultimately, I know to do the goal he wants to do, which is not only go play deep into the summer. He wants to play for the U.S. team, USA, in the Olympics. Because he wants everybody. It's going to be the dream team. Everybody's going to want to be a part of that thing. You got guys like Anthony Edwards is going to be on this team. LeBron's supposed to be on the team. Steph's supposed to be on the team. KD's supposed to be on the team. Supposed to be the last ride of the old heads, right? And so if you're a guy like Embiid, you want to be on this roster. You want to say that you are on this team. You want to say that you are around these guys, that you listen to these guys, that you watch these guys work out, you watch these guys train. You did all this stuff to where you have no choice but to improve. And that's the reason why a lot of times, not to jump too far off into FIBA basketball, but that's why a lot of the times these guys, especially younger guys, come back from FIBA and they jump. And it's not because FIBA is so much higher level competition. It's not. A, FIBA is more physical. I'll give you that. B, it's a lot more older teams. And see where I didn't say players, I said teams. A lot more older teams. where these teams, like these guys, all they do from the time they were 16, 17 years old is play international basketball. You know, all they do from the time they're, and they've been playing with the same core. Who was that? I think it was France 1 year. Either France or Spain had basically the same core of a team since they were all in like the early teens. And they played the national team together. And so that was the national team. And it wasn't, you know, the USA style of we're going to grab 12 guys. We're going to put them together for a couple of weeks and then we're going to just out-talent you, basically. These guys were teammates. I mean, so they were a legitimate team and it showed, right? And so the USA model, however, is a little different. Like I said, it's basically we're going to get 12 guys, 12 to 15 guys who are willing to go, and we're going to out-talent you. But what it does is it puts a lot of individual stars on the same team, right? A ton of individual stars. So a lot of times the young up-and-coming star is the person who, like, explodes after their FIBA summer. And Anthony Edwards is one of those key components. He is a dark horse MVP after spending not even legitimate FIBA time. He got FIBA time, but it wasn't the Olympic time. You know, a lot of times these guys explode after the Olympics. You'll see, like, LeBron went 08, and he comes back in 09, and it's like, oh, my God, what is that? And you were saying it pretty much in a way anyway, but it was like, oh, my God, what is that? Kobe, yeah, that 09 season is the, I think it's the, he, you know, physically carries. I couldn't say the word bring for some reason, but he brings the Lakers to the finals for the first one since Shaq left. You know, you get a lot of different stuff happening. The Redeem Team, the 2012 team, Dream Team 2, as they were called. Like, a lot of those guys came back that next year. Really, really special. And again, it's not because FIBA's amazing. It's because a lot of times, especially young guys, this is their first time seeing someone who flat out trains harder than them. And not just train harder than them, they're better than them, right? And so a guy like an Anthony Edwards, he's going to benefit majorly from being around LeBron, KD, Steph, and these guys who are better than him, have bigger legacies than him, are greater than him on the legacy scale, and they're going to train harder than him, like a lot harder. It's just the way they're going to operate. Steph has his routine. KD has his routine. LeBron has his routine. And they're going to train way harder than Anthony Edwards will, which is going to be great for him to see and great for him to try to mimic and emulate. He's going to be a lot better when he comes back. I saw it in Brandon Ingram. He did his FIBA experience. He came back a lot better. He actually played poorly in FIBA, but just being around KD and Dame and the rest of those guys, he came back a lot better. Experience I wish Zion would have. But back into the NBA, we got way sidetracked there with the 76ers and Joel Embiid, and then went down to FIBA. But back into the NBA, the MVP is something that we're going to, of course, be keeping our eye on. And then to me, it's a two-horse race. I'm going to speak about this on a video show, which actually should be out sooner rather than later. We're going to try and get a shorter return time on the video show. SGA versus Jokic, to me, is the battle, right? That is who the MVP is down to. You think Tatum, he's the best player on easily the best team. Would he get MVP looks? He's no-showed in several big games. So that's kind of what knocks him out. Giannis, to me, it's Jokic and SGA. And just entering a couple of nights ago, you got SGA. He's 35.5-6 on 50-some-odd percent shooting. Jokic is 26-12-9 on 58% shooting, right? And so what is interesting about it, and I posed it on the video show, but of course you haven't seen the video show yet, so I'll pose it again here. The word valuable, right? It is the most valuable player award. It's not the best player on the best team, otherwise Tatum would run away with it and people would go, he was nowhere near the MVP. It is the word valuable. So because it is not the best player on the best team, it is the word valuable. And to me, valuable means if you take off that player and make them a replacement level version of whoever the position is. So if we're saying SGA and Jokic, you would take SGA off Thunder, turn him into a replacement level player. You would take Jokic off the Nuggets, make him a replacement level player. What do the teams look like? If you take SGA off of the Oklahoma City Thunder and you make him, not slandering this guy, Tyus Jones. And I love Tyus Jones. If you guys remember my trade deadline, special shows that I did for a couple of weeks, a lot, I was advocating heavily for the New Orleans Pelicans trade for Tyus Jones. And I would say if the Pelicans don't do it, anybody needs a point guard. Lakers. At the time, D'Angelo Russell was struggling. Lakers. I was advocating for a couple of other teams. I'm like, Spurs need to play him more. Like, he's going to help Wemby a lot. You know, Tyus Jones started playing more, and Wemby's numbers went up. So I found that I was right. But, you turn SGA, and you presto change him into Tyus Jones. They're literally the San Antonio Spurs. And I think the Spurs might be better because Wemby's that special. They literally become the Spurs. You know, Wemby's to Chet Holmgren. Wemby's better than Chet, but Wemby to Chet Holmgren. You've got Shohan probably molds into Lou Dort. Keldon Johnson kind of molds into J-Dub. So on and so forth. In this case, Tyus Jones will mold into Tyus Jones. The kicker on the OKC team is probably J-Dub. There's no direct correlation. I mean, like I said, it's Keldon Johnson, but mostly advantage would go Thunder still, but Spurs would have Wemby. All right? If you remove Jokic, and let's say you turn Jokic into Nick Claxton, they're the Kings. Man, they're not for a second. They're the Kings. Kings or Cavs. But for the sake of analogy, they're the Kings. Or the Nets. Basically, a non-threat. But they're a playoff team. Because they could be the Cavs. No. Either the Nets or they're the Kings. The Nets are nowhere near contention. However, the Kings are 7th in the West right now. I'm going to be firmly in the play-in. I don't see the Spurs on my standings list. SGA is much more valuable to his team. Much more valuable to his team than Jokic is. Because the average age of the OKC starters and the average age of the University of Carolina starters are basically the same. Except one's playing in college basketball and the other one's playing in the National Basketball Association. SGA is leading the NBA version to currently one half game behind the other guy with an experienced team, with a championship level team, with a team that we know is already going to win a championship, with a team that we've seen him with Gordon and Braun and Murray and KCP and the rest of those guys, the rest of that crew. We've seen them go win a chip. Right, and so having OKC up in the standings the way they are, their team is so young, and SGA being a catalyst, thirty-six and six on above 50% shooting for a guard, it you have to reward that to me if you're the NBA voting. You have to reward the fact that. That guy's doing with such a young team, so many young guys. They don't have the championship pedigree built in. They're really, 2 years ahead of schedule, at least. Kind of like that Orlando team. Like, okay, he's not supposed to win right now. They're not. SG is the only one making real money. No, and Dort. Dort's making real money. Nobody else on that team is making real money. They're not supposed to be winning now. They're supposed to be, honestly, where Phoenix is. Right along that borderline playing our Sacramento, right along that borderline playing barely. If they're in the playoffs, it's barely. It wouldn't be shocking if they went to play in, lost both games and got bounced. You know, they should be at that point. And the fact that there's a very, very legitimate chance they're the one seed in the West, is insane. Like I said, it's very similar to Orlando. Orlando's way ahead of schedule. I think Ingles might be making the most money per year on that team. They're way ahead of schedule. People were talking about them being like the team that if they made the play-in, people are going to say successful season. Not, you know what I'm saying? Not like, oh, if they won their play-in game, made the playoffs. No. If they qualified for the play-in, people were going to deem it as a successful season. The Orlando Magic are currently one full game out of third. Again, a very legitimate chance that they could be the third seed, despite all of what they are going through. Again, youth. They don't even have anybody. They're at the stage where they're deciding fun maxes. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not even at the stage where they're deciding, like, oh, we're going to be, we have all these guys and we're going to have to figure it out. No. They're at the stage where they're deciding fun maxes. And yet, again, they are one singular game away from being the three seed in the East. So you look at the Thunder, you look at the Magic, you know, you got guys in SGA again, 36-6, over 50% shooting. He is my MVP this year, barring a late dramatic kick from Jokic, which I just don't see. SGA is my MVP for the season. All right, jumping down to the bottom of the standings. We were talking about the top. Let's jump down to the bottom. The Houston Rockets, who I did not name on my list of teams in the seeding, the Houston Rockets have been charging. We spoke about that Houston team when they put that team together in the offseason. I spoke about it with you guys, and I said I didn't get it. You weren't at the stage for this yet. You paid $180 million, take it a leak, give or take, to guys who can't shoot. Literally the only two people in the NBA in the 2022-2023 season to shoot below 40% and be decently high volume were Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks. And the Rockets gave both of them very large contracts with a lot of player control in it. And that was, you know, what they did this offseason. So I questioned it. I said, you guys aren't ready yet. Jalen Green wasn't ready to just have two guys with him, roll with him. What are we going to do with Jalen Green, considering that Fred VanVleet, you know, to be effective, needs the ball in his hand because we discussed he can't shoot. Dylan Brooks really can't shoot. So your four best players were guards. You had Jalen, three of your best players were guards, and none of them over the 6'5" mark. You had Jalen Green, Fred VanVleet, and Dylan Brooks. Like I said, none of them over 6'5". Jabari Smith Jr., like, he's not ready yet. You look at Tari Eason, he's not ready yet. Now, Aperun Sengun was a major surprise. He actually gets a lot of credit, Aperun Sengun, for what they've got going on. Now, the crazy part is Sengun's out. Which actually begs the question, because Houston's a game behind Golden State. And it was a few games back, Golden State, specifically Draymond, was asked about Houston. They, you know, Houston was, at that point, sixth game winning streak, gaining on the Warriors, game and a half, two games. And you start looking at the schedule, you're like, mathematically, they can catch Golden State. And then Draymond made a comment about how he's not worried about Houston, right? And so now, Houston's only a game behind. Houston's only a game behind from taking the Warriors out of the play-in. Which would be dastardly for the Warriors to have wasted another Steph season when he's, let's be honest, probably this year and next year's the last two of his legitimate prime. That's painful if Houston catches Golden State and knocks them out of the play-in tournament, because Houston's on an 8-game win streak. And they are absolutely rolling. They're young, they're feisty. Ime Udoka figured something out with that team. Which is not surprising. It's Ime Udoka. But he may have figured something out with that team. Our next topic is about Jonte Porter of the Toronto Raptors. And he's been removed from the lineup. And the reason why it's kind of an awkward transition for my last thing, because more news, Wolves is breaking more news right now. He's tweeting about it, rather. So a couple hours ago, Wolves and a couple other guys, myself included, were breaking news of the NBA had removed, the Toronto Raptors had removed center Jontay Porter from their lineup due to betting irregularities around Porter. And the two main situations were a game of January 26th and a game of March 20th. So Wolves just tweeted out, it's like 7:58 p.m. Wolves tweeted out more reporting for ESPN David Purdom. Sorry, I mispronounced that. At least one other U.S. sportsbook detected unusual betting interest on Porter props in games in question. A sportsbook industry source told ESPN that betting multiple betting accounts attempted to bet large amounts, upwards of $10,000 and $20,000, on Porter unders in the January game against the Clippers. A betting limit on NBA player props varied by sportsbook and customer, but it's typically around 1,200. People were trying to do whatever they could to bet Jontay Porter props against the Clippers, source said. And then just a few days ago, the same thing. We had a bunch of people trying to bet the under for more. Okay. So I was reading about this story. And what happened was there was two games in question. And Jontay Porter is more famously the brother of Michael Porter Jr., right? They played in Missouri together, whatever. The situation arose when Jontay, there were several people betting his unders. Now, usually people getting overs, nobody really paid attention. Like, if I'm supposed to, like, if the guy is supposed to get 9.5, 5.5, 3.5, hit a 3, and you just smash all his overs, no one's really going to pay attention. Low number unders catch people's eyes, especially if it's a large amount of money. So, like, I think one of his stat lines, people bet a lot of money on the under, was like 9.5, 5.5, like 1.5, and then 1.3. And people were obliterating his unders, right? Trying to bet insane amount of money on the unders. So in one of those games in question, Porter subs himself out due to an eyeball like pain or whatever, and everything about his under, of course, hit. Consequently, that ended up being the biggest winner of anybody's day at the sportbook. Like, the sportsbook published which player prop hit the hardest. Like, basically, who won the most money from a player prop, it was Jontay Porter's unders. And then, like, another game, he does something similar. A lot of money gets put on his unders randomly, and he hits it again. He hits all his unders. So he's been removed. What makes the eyeball game more interesting was, like, a day later or 2 days later, he goes over. He has like a pretty good game, like 12-7 with like 2 blocks and a 3. Like, he plays really, really well. And it's like, dude, this eyeball injury kept you from doing even something. And that's, to me, what caught the eye of the authorities. Now, a lot of people are going to say, oh, I told you guys, sports was rigged. Okay, Jontay Porter isn't changing the landscape. He plays for the Raptors. I don't recall naming a Raptor. Yeah, I don't know what kind of name of the Toronto Raptors in my standings. Right, so the Toronto Raptors are not about to change the landscape of the NBA. Betting unders are not, right? But it does, if somebody is, I'm going to be honest, insignificant, as Jontay Porter is falsifying numbers and rigging numbers for his unders and et cetera, it does put into question bigger games, bigger events, more miraculous comebacks, and stuff of that nature. Who is tied into the gambling aspect? Who is tied into the financial gain, upward financial gain, if certain events were to occur? And so that's the issue with what Jontay Porter is doing. Not necessarily the act itself, but the impending unfortunate implications on the integrity of the game is the unfortunate part. But up next, we're going to shift to the NCAA tournament and talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. Oh, that was a great A block. I don't know about you guys. That thing had multiple layers. We did FIBA. We had a FIBA segment. We had the NBA. We had national team stuff. We had perspective bumps in play. We had recollections. That was great. That was a great A block. If you skipped on to the B block because you want to hear about the NCAA tournament, I'd go listen to that A block. You learned a lot there. Covered a lot. But jumping into the B block is the NCAA tournament. I will not malign you with every analysis of every game because I didn't watch every game. I'm interested in the men's and the women's side. I didn't watch every game. I won't malign you with it. I did watch a lot of LSU. I'm an LSU fan. I did watch a lot of North Carolina. I'm a North Carolina fan. I saw the end of Creighton, Oregon. Spectacular ending. I'm watching currently Caitlin Clark's last home game at Iowa. But I won't sit here and malign you with how the tournament's looking. South Carolina's dominant. What's shocking about that on the women's side, right? So, but I will, however, go into how my bracket's looking. Everybody talks about their bracket. I was out last week, so I didn't get to share with you guys my bracket, my Final Four, and et cetera. So, on the men's side, my bracket currently ranks 1.1 million in the world on the ESPN Tournament Challenge. That's not great, right? But I'm at 95.6% accuracy entering tonight's contest. I don't get any men's games on tonight, but entering the contest tonight. But my bracket is going to fall because my Final Four picks are already out, which is Kentucky. Something we spoke about, watching a lot of the men's game. I didn't watch a lot of the men's game this year. I just didn't. And I kind of picked guys I kind of knew. Players I knew. Like, I knew Rob Dillingham, right? And I spoke about on the video show with Jai from the Hey Jai podcast and IMS Productions. And who I knew was Rob Dillingham. And I knew him from a couple of times they played LSU. It was a name I saw. And I was watching looking at the mock drafts. And I was like, who are these people? It was like the top 10. I think I knew one person, Rob Dillingham. I think I'd heard of the number one overall pick or projected number one overall pick. I think he's a French kid. But, that was it. It wasn't like in years past where it's just these dogs everywhere. Like, next year, I'm going to watch a lot of more men's college basketball next year. The Boozer Boys, Cooper Flag, Bronny's probably going to be back for year two. Like, I'm going to watch a lot of the men's game next year because of the star power. There's no star power in today's game. There just isn't. But my Final Four for the men's side, jumping back into the bracket, was North Carolina over Connecticut, and then Kentucky over Purdue. And I had Connecticut I had North Carolina and UK meeting in the championship game with North Carolina winning it all. So my champion's still alive. My Final Four pick of UK is already out. And I'll share with you guys my second chance bracket next week whenever that comes out. On the women's side, however, the much more interesting side, I'm ranked 1.5 million out of everybody in the world with a 57.3% accuracy, although that is going to go up the further we get into the tournament. So my Final Four for the women's side was South Carolina, Stanford, LSU, and Connecticut, with Stanford over South Carolina, LSU over Connecticut, and LSU winning it all. I can admit, that's a little biased. I'm totally going to admit that. I'm willing to admit that. Because I'm admitting that because I am an LSU not only fan, I'm an alumni, right? And so I kind of picked my Final Four for the advantage of what would happen for LSU. I can admit that, right? What's better for LSU is that South Carolina's not in the title game. I'm going to be 100% honest. That is a horrible matchup for LSU. We have not beat them about 8 years. We just haven't. And no matter what iteration now, LSU pre-Kim Mulkey is a little bit different, right? Because Dawn was in her absolute bag in terms of recruiting and the star power she had. I mean, Asia Wilson, you know, you have Aaliyah Boston, you know, to be, you know, just some of the names. I mean, these are two number one overall picks. These are high-level, Olympic-level players. She had them on her roster at South Carolina, right? And that's just a couple of the superstars she's had at South Carolina, right? LSU at the time was going through the Nikki Fargus era. Wasn't all that great. Kim Mulkey showed up 3 years ago. Year one was a lot of Nikki Fargus players and a lot of just trying to clean the program up and make it a high-level program the way it needs to be. Year two, you win the title. Still don't beat South Carolina, but you win the title. Year three, you're the three seed again. You still don't beat South Carolina, right? It's just a bad matchup. What South Carolina has in depth and experience and just know-how, LSU doesn't have. Now they're trying to fix. Of course, I think, me personally, Angel Reese is back next year. I think her not announcing is kind of seeing where her draft stock is after the tournament. I don't think it's going to be any higher than seven. I think she comes back next year, right? Haley Van Lith is still projected top five. I think she deuces up LSU and she moves on. But it would not shock me if she returns next year. And there's already a 6'5" transfer coming in from Arkansas. So LSU was looking to be more South Carolina-like in terms of the just South Carolina has size everywhere. Literally, they're a really, really big team. There is size everywhere at South Carolina, right? And so that is kind of what the rivalry situation is. But again, back to my bracket, I kind of picked the bracket, at least the Final Four, off of what I want to see happen for LSU. Now, I didn't do dumb stuff like have 11 seeds make it and all this other stuff for the purpose of LSU being a game for LSU. No, I didn't do that, right? But in that Final Four, I think LSU's going to beat UConn. I just do. There's too much. I think LSU's a better team. Or they didn't play like it early. I told my dad when I went seeing him this weekend, like, hey, welcome LSU's girls team to the tournament. They only took them six quarters because they didn't play like themselves for six quarters in that tournament. They just happened to be better than the other team they played. But Stanford over South Carolina was kind of hard overhead, but at the same time, if Cameron brings on one and she pulls Camilla Cardoza out the paint, that's a lot of driving opportunities for that Stanford team. And they could really make some a big difference if Camilla Cardoza is pulled out of the paint due to Cameron Brink, if she's able to make some outside shots. So that is kind of what I'm thinking there. Then I have LSU over Stanford, like I said, winning it all. But let's jump into kind of, and I spoke about it on the audio video show too, so I won't go too in depth about it because there was a back and forth about it. But I think it got lost a little bit in the back and forth, my point. My point was on the show, and I proposed a question to Jai, and he answered, and he pretty much gave me the answer I expected, which was I told him name five players, and I'll do it to you too. Name five players from the men game right now. Right now, like just boom. I give you 5 seconds. Okay, now we've all been watching men's March Madness. We've all had our eyes on it. I got Rob Dillingham and Zach Eadney. Update. Entering this turn. Oh, and then the kid, I can't think of his name, but the guy from Oakland that made the 10 threes, him too. But update, I would have gone into the tournament with two of those three names. I still would have known Zach Eadney and Rob Dillingham, and that's it. Okay. Now, I'll do the same exact exercise. You got 5 seconds to name me five women players right now. Go. Okay, I can almost guarantee you, you had three, and you were trying to snap your way into a couple of more. You were saying the girl from. Right? That's a lot better than you do on the men's side. I can almost guarantee it. I'm serious. I can almost, wow, Caitlin Clark just let off a couple of expletives. But wow. But anyway, I can almost guarantee you did a lot better on the women's side. You had Caitlin Clark, injuries, Flawley Johnson, Haley Van Lith. Now, I'm an LSU fan, so I'm a little partial. But Cameron Brink, Aaliyah Edwards, Paige Beckers, and et cetera. Like, I can almost guarantee that was some names that you rattled off fairly quickly. Juju Watkins. Like, and you see, I can even pause and think of some more names. Like, that's not happening on the men's side, right? Like, you're not pausing and thinking of even more names. Like, oh, I figured somebody out. This person. Like, no. I can give you all day on the men's side. You're never going to think of anybody else. Like, and on the women's side, the longer you sit there and think, the more you figure out, wait, this person, that person, this person. You know, you just start putting people back and forth together. You know, person to person, you start figuring out, you know, people that you want to, name and that you begin to name, right? And so the NCAA created a problem that the NBA also created, and they created the same problem in two different variations. The NCAA and the NBA created a problem where their entire season boils down to 6 weeks. The whole thing boils down to 6 weeks. The entire season. For the NCAA, it's about 3 weeks. But the entire thing boils down to about 3 weeks in the college basketball, or 4 weeks for college basketball, and the NBA, it's 6 weeks. Right? And it's 4 weeks in college basketball called March Madness. No one cares about men's college basketball this season, especially this season, before March Madness. And everybody's betting it like crazy, and it's all the rave from all the local wing bars, and everybody's watching March Madness. But no one cared about men's college basketball 3 weeks ago. Unless you were ramping up for your bracket. And then if you go to the women's side, people were watching it. There was more star power on the women's side. Like I said, I rattled off names of the names, and everybody I said, you probably went, oh, I've heard of her. At worst, I've heard of her. Yeah, I know who that is. I've heard of her. Let's say at absolute worst, you did the I've heard of her. Or that name sounds familiar. You just start snapping. Your stuff is like, man, who is that? Oh, that's her. Right? You see in the commercials, especially if you watch March Madness, you've seen the commercials of these ladies and their NIL deals and their branding. Like, you've seen this kind of stuff, right? The NBA did the same thing. The NBA, with ring culture, put everything in their entire season, they put it in the 6 weeks. So now it doesn't matter that LeBron James is having the greatest, by far, 21st year season. Like, it's not even close. Like, if you put, I think, the next four PPGs together, it doesn't equal his number. Like, and no one cares. Because no one's going to care if he bounces in the first round of playoffs. Right? And no one's going to care if SGA is the MVP and he accepts it after losing in the second round. Like, so much of the NBA's landscape has been altered and, to me, drastically discredited by the ring culture aspect of, oh, you didn't win the title, it doesn't matter. Seriously, who was the MVP last year? I tested. Who was the NBA MVP last year? Okay, it was Jokic because he won. Okay. Who was the NBA MVP in 2012? You have no idea, do you? I do. It's LeBron. But no one remembers that. I'm trying to think of a year where the MVP and the champ didn't go together. But anyway, so a lot of time with ring culture, that's a problem. Like, so much of the accomplishments are just erased. Charles Barkley is going to get screwed in history. Charles Barkley is one of the 30 greatest players ever. He's one of the top 5 power forwards ever. He's going to get abused in history. Why? He doesn't have a ring. So people are going to discount him and just remove him. He doesn't have a championship. So many of these guys, you know, that are great players are being discounted because of rings. Joel Embiid is still being discounted because he's never been to conference finals. Jason Tatum is being slandered a lot of the time because he's never been to a conference finals. And that's the NBA's problem, right? So if you go to the college men's college basketball season, you get a situation, you get a society where no one cares about the regular season until a conference tournament and NCAA tournament time. So that's about 6 weeks. Conference tournament's a week, then there's about a few days, and then you got a four-week NCAA tournament dash. So about 5-6 weeks on both sides, you've created a market, you've created an idea, you've created an identity where the only thing that matters is the tournament. So the men's game, that people like Zach Edeney, people are discovering him. They're like, man, I see people on Twitter like, man, who's the big guy out of Purdue? The dude's the reigning national player of the year. And there's people legitimately saying, who's the big guy out of Purdue? Why is he only a second round pick? Like, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm having to bring people back to reality of he is a lumbering giant who can't shoot. The game doesn't have that in it anymore. Right? And I spoke about it before. He's going to go to Europe and be amazing. I hope he doesn't force the NBA too long, because he's going to go to Europe and be spectacular. He's 7'4". He's big. He's lumbering. He's got post moves. He's got defense. Like I said, that feeble style of rough physicality, he'll go over there and make $40, $50 million over the course of his career just from being a big body. So I hope he don't try to force the NBA too long if it doesn't work out early. But just going back to the tournament, the women's game is so vastly improved in college, and there's certain aspects that I kind of like. And I spoke about it earlier. I said we're going to touch on it. One of the things I like, top four seed host. Whoever is the, you know, a top four seed, you host your little mini bracket. So it's like, yes, there's regions. So in the women's game, unfortunately, has two regions. There's Portland 1, Portland 2, Albany 3, and Albany 4. And that's to kind of cut the cost and make a more of a centralized situation. Because you can see with these smaller teams, like, no one's traveling to Des Moines, Iowa. Like, you know, not Des Moines, Iowa, not Iowa City, wherever the University of Iowa is. The game that didn't involve Iowa was Anthony Jeff. Well, if you neutral sighted all the games, like, LSU's going to fill a, put up people up in the gym. They don't matter. They don't care. Texas people up in the gym. There's certain brands, Iowa people, like, certain brands will put people up in the gym. But for the most part, people are not going to go fill up gyms for the women's game. So the idea of the higher seed hosting, it becomes a home game. LSU was packed for both LSU games. And because of the women's game and the advantage of not only my higher seed, I'm typically a better team, I probably have the best superstar, I'm probably going to get the calls because they want that superstar to advance, I'm just being honest, and I'm at home. So I don't have to travel. To me, it's home games. I have my home crowd. Everyone's against you. You had to travel. You had to stay here. You had to mentally prepare yourself to be here multiple days, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that is huge. And it's big, and that's why I think a lot of times you don't see the upsets in the women's game. Like, the 14 seeds are 0-120 or something like that in the women's tournament. Like, you don't see the big upsets. Why? Because that 14 had to play that 3 seed on the 3 seed's home floor. It's not some random empty gym in Saskatchewan. I just threw out a random city. It's not some random empty gym in Des Moines where these neither one of these two teams are anywhere located to those cities. And there's in a 15,000 seed gym with 6,000 people. And now there's no home court advantage, et cetera, that road team gets hot, like we saw LSU play Rice. That road team gets hot, and now, or that low seed gets hot, and now there's no crowd to amp you back up to pull you in. You kind of pull your own energy. It adds a different element, right? And so I think on the men's game, I wonder what's the financial benefit of those neutral site games. Seriously. Or could they say, okay, how about this? Kentucky is the 3 seed, or the 2 seed. So they host their little mini bracket. Whoever they're scheduled to play in that next round, seeding-wise, goes to them, whatever, and they play in a rough arena. It's still a neutral site for 3 of the teams, but you're guaranteed a sellout for the Kentucky game. Like, right? So if and when they win it, that's another guaranteed sellout. You do it NCAA style. You split the profit at the gate. And everybody goes home happy. You get a relationship where you establish having two sellout games. You don't get these weird empty gym games. No, you play like, imagine how sold out if Grambling went to Purdue. It's a sellout. Without a shadow of a doubt, it's a sellout of a game because Purdue, it's an opportunity for a home game, right? You know, it's an opportunity for automatic sellout. It's going to happen every time. So I think the men game should look into that. Oh, that's really, it's a really cool thing. And then for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, you go to neutral site. Like, to me, okay, now you're on neutral site at that point. But for the round of 64 and 32, having that higher seed host or that little region host is pretty dope. But up next, we're going to shift to Jack's hot take, which is going to be about the hip drop being banned in the NFL. Welcome back into the show, and now we are going to talk about the NFL, because of course the NFL can't let anybody have anything on their own. We spoke about that a few episodes back, might have been late season 4, early in episode season 5. The NFL calendar is designed where they can't let anybody have anything, literally at all. They're trying to take the Christmas day away from the NBA. They won't give them Thanksgiving. They now in the middle of the NBA season has very much so amplified their trade deadline. NFL free agency again comes right in the middle of the NBA season. And then they have their annual league meetings. Again, right in the middle of the annual league meetings. I'm sorry, right in the middle of March Madness and NBA's ramping up to the playoffs. And what does the NFL do? Annual league meetings, coaches' photos, league rule changes. Don't pay attention to us over there. Pay attention to us. Again, the NFL draft is weeks away. At this point, it's like 30 days away, give or take, 26-ish. We're talking the NFL is going to be dominating the media all over again. And the big thing that came out of the NFL annual league meetings was the hip drop tackle. For those of you who do not know, it is when a player tackling another player from behind or the side, from what the league showed, jumps in the air, kind of swings their weight, and pulls a player back. It's very similar to the players usually fall in very similar mansion of the horse collar. But what makes the hip drop tackle so brutal to the body is a lot of times the players are jumping and landing on the ankles and the knees of the player they're tackling. We had a lot of guys go out to high ankle sprains or worse. Mark Andrews and Tony Pollard being the main two. And I believe were the first two examples of the tackle being shown in the video of what's going to be flagged now. Players went up in arms. It's flag football. Just put flags on them. The defense got no chance. Woo-doo-woo-doo. But also, the NFL decided that the replay official can review roughing the passer calls. So that's going to help a lot of guys out because what they believe is like there's no way it's roughing the passer. And then they get the flag anyway and it's game changing. Well, the replay official can go in and say, no, that's not roughing the passer. That could be huge. But the hip drop tackle is an unsafe tackle. I'm just going to be honest. It is. To me, it's no different than a horse collar. And I'm a defensive coach, so I understand it. And I was talking to my head coach about it, who I'm sure is going to be on the video show at some point. And he was saying his big thing was, what do you teach the kids? Everything should be centered of what do you teach? Like, the NFL sets the precedent for college, which sets the person for high school. So whenever that person gets to college and beyond, they know the basic of what you want to know. So what do you teach the kids is what he said. And I'm like, Tim, I'm going to teach my defense. You're going to have to roll. You're going to have to gauge. You're going to have to hawk tackle. If you're coming in from behind, grab and turn. You know, but the NFL gave clarification. It's they don't mind when you grab a guy from behind and you kind of sit down. That's fine. What they were getting rid of, or what they're attempting to legislate out of the game, is the jump drop. And when I told him that, he said, oh, okay, no, that one I get. That's not that bad. Because it's like when you grab a guy at the waist and you just jump on the back of his leg, like that's incredibly dangerous, right? And so a lot of times, a lot of fans were up in arms, and of course fans always complain about a game that they played no further than high school or rec league, and you know, they're talking about player safety of grown men, and it's just a whole other thing, guys feeding their families. But what often isn't talked about, what often I will say, is that NFL players, almost to a letter, would rather you hit them high. And I know we're legislating concussions out of the game. I know concussions cause could cause irreparable damage to the brain, CTE, spinal injuries, etc. I get it. Ask most NFL players, almost like I said, almost to a T, where they would rather get hit. To a man, they will almost always say high. Because they see high, a lot of the times they don't get concussed. You can kind of protect yourself with your shoulder. And on top of that, you hit me low, you blow my knee out, my career's over. You hit me high, I get a concussion, I'm going to miss a game or two. I'll be back though. You know what I'm saying? And that's how a lot of guys see it. They're looking at the fact that financially, they knew when they signed up to play this game, they were going to be physical, rough, tough. They were going to struggle to walk. They were going to do whatever, you know, the situation was. But they signed up for a career to feed their families. And they kind of look at it as, you know, if I finally get that big deal that could really change my family's circumstance, and then you blow my knee out, my career is over, it was all for nothing. You know, and so they'd rather get hit high. You know, they don't, you know, they have a little CTE, they're fine with it. You know, they got guys like Warren Sapp who have openly talked about there's memory gaps and there's issues and there's stuff like that. Like, he'll drive to somewhere and then he'll, not wake up, but effectively he'll get to that location and be like, how'd he get there? You know, it's just stuff like that happening. But if you told him, okay, I'll give you perfect memory, perfect brain function, whatever, for $20 million in the bank and 7 years off your career, he'll tell you, no, I'm good. You know, and it's just stuff that these guys have not only accepted, but they've embraced. They'd rather get hit up high than hit low. And so that's a very interesting thing. But the hip drop is officially out of the NFL. It will be legislated. I'm sure it will be a mess of a call the first few weeks. It's going to be heavily flagged in the preseason. Because they're going to want to over-flag it. And the preseason kind of regulated out. And then, of course, after half a year, it will be like it's always been there. A lot of overreaction from fans today, but the NFL, of course, stealing headlines from March Madness and from the NBA. But that is all I have for you guys today. Remember to follow on all social media platforms, the social media handle at JTime Sports. As always, don't forget to like, rate, subscribe, and share to the Just in Time Sports podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Look for the video show on YouTube today as well. That should be released today per my producer. I just talked to him actually while recording this. He told me that that will be on YouTube today. So by the time you guys hear this, it will be right around the same time release. So you have the audio show and you have the video show on the same day. We'll try to keep from doing that too often. In perfect world, they're spaced out a little bit. And I may have to edit my audio show recordings in order for the video show to work, but we'll get to that scheduling situation later. But that is all I have for today. This is your host and owner, Justin Jackson, signing out. We'll be right back.